When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to another edition of Showtime with Coop. Insightful BS with my Laker teammates and NBA legends, and in the house today. And B, I'm going to go out on a limb, and I want you to back me up on this. Two-thirds of the greatest backcourt that's ever played, and I'm putting that down right now. Michael Cooper, Byron Scott, Magic Johnson. You can't name any of the three guards, and I don't think in the history of the league that were better than us. What do you say about that, B?
Coop, I say, first of all, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. So good to see you. I agree 110% with you. I've been debating that for years, and I've been looking at other backcourts trying to figure out, when you put together a threesome like the threesome that we had back in the Showtime 80s, there's not a better backcourt in the history of basketball. And I even went back to the Laker days, you know, when they had Jess and Gil Goodrich. I was like, all right, who's the third guy? You know, I couldn't figure that one out, you know, so all these backcourts, you know, in the NBA history, when you start talking about the best trio of backcourts in the history of the NBA, no doubt in my mind, Michael Cooper, Byron Scott, Magic Johnson, without a doubt.
No, B, I when I was kind of thinking about that, the only one that may rival us is back in the late 60s, 70s, Walt Frazier, Dick Barnett, and Earl the Pearl Monroe. That was a good three, but none of them, the only one that could play defense was Frazier. The other ones weren't defensive. All three of us were pretty good defensive players.
As you said before, you were the best defensive player I've ever been around, individually, team-wise. And when I talk about defense, all-around defense, you know, Coop, you had everything. You know, speed, quickness, strength, athleticism. You had them long-ass arms so you can guard 6'8", 6'9", guys. But also that helped you guard those 6'1", 6'2", guys. And then you had me, you know, pretty good on individual defense and team. And then you had Buck, who was, you know, okay individualized, but great team defender. So when you put those three elements together, again, I just don't think, you know, Earl and Walton, there's no doubt about it. Those two guys are great with Barnett. But those three guys, to me, still don't hold a candle to what we were able to do on both ends of the court.
I agree with that. Everybody, Byron Scott is in the house on the show. B, I'm going to show you something real quick because I'm real proud of this shirt here. I got my New Mexico Lobo shirt on because we went to ASU. We're going to get into that a little bit, how we used to whoop y'all's ass. But that's a whole nother story for a moment, Todd, back in the 70s.
It is.
B, I talk a lot.
I was playing. I don't know what you're talking about.
I talk a lot about, well, as we were growing up, you hear all this where the best players are from New York, from Washington, Rutgers Park, from Philadelphia. You know what? People don't understand. We had a lot of great players, myself, yourself included, Reggie Theus, the late, great Dennis Johnson, Tyson Chandler, Lisa Leslie. Tell us about you growing up in Los Angeles.
Russell Westbrook.
Okay, all right, we're going to get to you.
You know, yeah, AR jumping, you know, another century or so above. But yeah, Cooper, I'm with you. You know, I remember playing back in the days, my high school days. That's all I heard about was New York ballers, you know, how good these guys were. And I played AAU ball when it was BCI at the time, you know, and I had just got in my junior year and went to Utah and Arizona and played against the so-called best, you know, high school players in the country. And we ate New York up. You know, I mean, we ate New York. We lost one game in 2 years in the team that I played with. And we had myself, Leon Woods, Darren Day, Cliff Livingston, guys like that. So we had a little bit of a chip on our shoulder because that's all we kept hearing was about, you know, was about New York ballers. So growing up, I kept hearing that same thing. And like you said, when I look around from when we played and even now, you know, California has always represented itself well with some of the best high school players, best college players, best pro players. in the history of the game. So, like, you threw out a couple of names and you know, guys that we know, you know, real well. You can even go up to the Paul Pierce's and James Harden today, Russell Westbrook. We still, you know, California still put out some great basketball talent, and I continue to think it will continue, you know, as we get older and older, and even when we leave this earth.
Are there different styles between, like, New York and L.A. in terms of reputation versus reality, or is it similar?
Yeah, you know, the reputation they had when I was coming up is that all these guys had great handles and were great athletes. Couldn't shoot worth a damn, but they all had great handles and, you know, great athletes. And the word they're hearing on the West Coast was that, you know, we could shoot and do all that, but we were soft, you know, which I still don't understand. I know that man I'm talking to, Mr. Michael Cooper, was not soft at all. I know me when I was in the NBA with him was not soft at all. I was just like, me and Coop and Buck, you know, we were the enforcers on our team. You know, we was ready to fight anybody at any time, anywhere. It didn't matter. You know, so that soft, you know, label that was given to us in California was, you know, I think misrepresented it because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't me, it wasn't him. And I think a lot of guys that label, but it was kind of the label back in the day. We were soft. We had guys who could shoot, you know, and New York had ballers they could handle and they were tough. And that's so much bullshit. I don't know what else to say about it.
Oh, finally, you came out of your pocket, Beak. I was going to talk about, fuck that, man. We were damn good, man. But anyway, I'll be the one with the potty mouth. So, Beak, you find yourself at Morningside. You have a great high school career. And now you find yourself at Arizona State. How did that happen?
Oh, man, Coop, it was a long process. You know, I was getting heavily recruited by pretty much everybody on the West Coast. You know, I made a quick point to everybody in the East. I ain't going East. I ain't going where it's cold and snow and all that stuff. I'm a California boy. I'm gonna stay close to the West Coast. You know, so that pretty much got rid of all those people in the East and the Midwest about recruiting me. So it basically came down for me to ASU, UCLA, and Vegas. And at the end of the day, when I was choosing between Arizona State and UCLA, Jim Herrick, who I know you remember well, who was assistant coach at UCLA, mm-hmm. He came in. I still was trying to figure out where I wanted to go because my mom was like, you know, I would love for you to stay home and go to UCLA. My dad was like, no, you probably, you know, Arizona State, Coach Newman, they're going to take care of you. And so I was torn. And my mom said to me one day, she said, you know what? Something's going to happen that's going to make your decision easy. Well, that something that happened was Jim Hare came to Morningside and I still was, you know, trying to decide. And he told me, he said, look at me, you know, Mr. Scott, I want you to look me in my eyes. And he said, people that don't go to UCLA don't beat UCLA. And I said, God damn, I'm going to Arizona State.
No just kidding.
Play your ass twice a year. you don't challenge an inner city kid like that. You don't say like that to me, right? And so that was the reason I went to Arizona State was basically because it wasn't that far from home, number one. Number two, I got the chance to play against UCLA twice a year.
Wow. B, you know what? You some of your accolades, three-time NBA champion, 85, 87, 88, NBA All-Rookie First Team in 84. You're a EuroLeague champion, First Team All-Pac-10 in 83, Pac-10 Freshman of the Year in 1980. You got your jersey retired at Arizona State. I ain't never got mine retired, but I'm working on it. 14th Parade All-American, McDonald's All-American. I mean, you had so many accolades, and you go to Arizona State. Is that why you left early, because you felt you were ready for the NBA?
I did, Coop. I mean, I played there 3 years. I had another year of eligibility. And what made my decision, I think, easy is that the late, great DJ, who you mentioned earlier, Dennis Johnson, who played with the Phoenix Suns at the time, and I used to go to a lot of Phoenix Suns game, and I used to watch him in the Greyhound, you know, Walter Davis, you know, and that was a hell of a backcourt.
Yeah.
And he would come to ASU and would run with us, you know, in the summertime when the season was over. He would come to ASU and run with us. So this one particular time he came after I finished my junior year, and I was trying to decide if I was going to go pro or not, and we were playing, you know, 5-on-5, and he guarded me every game. And I had a nice, you know, 4 or 5 games. I was playing well against one of the best defensive players in the NBA. And DJ told me after we finished playing, we were in the locker room, you know, we showered up and we getting dressed. And he said, so what you going to do? And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, well, you know, I know you got a big decision. Are you going to go pro or are you going to, you know, stay your last year in college? And I said, I don't know, DJ. I'm still trying to figure it out, man. He looked at me, Coop. He said, you ready? He said, you ready. And that right there, you know, gave me the confidence to say, you know what, if I got a guy like DJ, you know, telling me that I'm ready, you know, I must be ready. So I'm going to go ahead and make that decision. I decided to go pro.
You know, Ari, some of the guys, there's a difference between cocky and confidence. And I remember when Byron was coming out and all the flack was him was coming out and Clippers had the pick and, you know, the great Jerry West, and we'll get all into that. But one thing that Byron said when he came into the NBA was, I'm better than Magic Johnson. He put that statement out there. And you know what? When we finally were able to get him, the trade was made. We lost Norm Nixon, but we brought in this young guy. And we put his ass through the test the first two or three days. And B, I'm going to tell you this. I never said this to you. I knew you were ready and you were going to be part of our team after about the fourth training camp because, all right, we were banging him and he was hitting us back and we kind of isolated him. We went and talked to him for a couple of times and him and AC Green were off to the side. And but you know what? He never lost that focus. And one day he went in. This is when I knew he was ready and AC Green was ready. So I went in to dunk on AC Green. AC Green blocked my dunk and slammed me to the floor and said, boy, you better stop that because AC didn't curse. But Byron went in, I guess it was always one of the veterans there that was there and slam dunked the basketball. And that's when we had a newfound respect for him and he became part of the group. What was your feeling be when we were going through those times in training camp?
Well, you know, first of all, I wish I hadn't said that about Urban in the first place because I knew y'all was upset. And I didn't know how good, you know, I didn't know how good, you know, Buck, yourself, you know, were, you know, I'm just watching on TV, but to actually get into practice and go against y'all, I was like, shit, these dudes, they got game, you know, and they were going at me, AT, they were beating me up and everything. And I was like, you know what? I'm from the hood. So I'm, you know, everything they give me, I'm going to give back. You know, that was kind of my, you know, my way of thinking. But when they accepted me, it was like one of the happiest days of my life. Cause I knew it was going to be hard because I knew Norm was a boy. And I needed to go through the fire. I knew I had to earn my stripes. And that's probably one of the main reasons that, you know, why, you know, Coop was throwing them sharp ass elbows and hit me and Buck was hitting me, that I didn't panic. I didn't really retaliate because I understood that, hey, man, they, you know, they're a little upset. You know, you hear in place of their boy, you got to deal with it. And I was like, but the way for me to make a statement was, you know, first chance I got to dunk on somebody, I was going to dunk it and dunk it hard. And I thought once I did that, and they was kind of like, oh, shit, okay, well, all right, well, this kid ain't bad, you know. And then we were the Three Musketeers from that point on. It was heaven after that.
Yeah, it wasn't enough that you'd replace Norm Nixon, you know. Like that was hard enough as it was as a team that had won championships together with Norm. It was, you know, then you made the comments about Magic. So it was like you did not make it easy on yourself.
Right. No, I didn't. I pretty much put my damn foot in my mouth, and I had to deal with it. And Coop and Buck, they didn't let me forget it. That first four or five practices, man, I was like, shit, these dudes. First, I thought they were crazy. Then I was like, but you know what? It's all good because I'm from Inglewood too. I can be crazy as hell too, you know. So I had that kind of, you know, attitude. But I also knew that, look, I'm gonna have to go through this. It's as simple as that. You
right.
To go through, you have to earn your stripes. And I knew that. So, it was bad, but it wasn't that bad. And to be honest, I thought it brought us closer together as the years went on. Obviously, we had each other's back. And like Coop said earlier, we formed the best trio of guards, you know, to me in NBA history.
You know what, B? And I thought, again, that was something cocky to say, but that's the confidence in you. And you know what? If I had thought of it, I'd have said the same thing. You know, who is this guy? Who are they? You know, I'm here. I'm just as good as these guys. So don't look at it like that. Right. But you're listening to Byron Scott on Showtime with Coop podcast, Insightful BS with my Laker teammates and NBA legends. And be with this portion of the show, which I call Coop's Lightning Round. I'm going to give you five names and you tell me as much about this person as you want. Okay. Hey, sports fan. It's that time of the year again, and all eyes are now turning to football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pros and college football action this season. Get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest and the world's largest 200,000 NFL Survivor contest open now at BetOnline. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 100% welcome bonus. Be sure to take advantage of their open day super promo. Make a bet on the Thursday, September 9th season opener between the Super Bowl champ Buccaneers and the Dallas Cowboys. And if you lose, your wagers will be refunded up to $25 for new customers only when signing up and using promo code NFL100. You're listening to Byron Scott on Showtime with Coop Podcast, Insightful BS with my Laker teammates and NBA legends. And be with this portion of the show, which I call Coop's Lightning Round. I'm going to give you five names, and you tell me as much about this person as you want, okay? Okay, here we go. Jerry West.
Okay. Innovator, one of the greatest generation of talent that I think we have seen in our generation. Everywhere he goes, you know, the Lakers, Memphis, you know, he just touches gold. I mean, he has a unique way of being able to scout talent. And even to this day, you know, Coop, I still call him my basketball dad because every decision I made when it came to coaching, I call the logo up. He would always pick up the phone. We would always talk about it. I would get my five or six words in, and he took over the conversation. And then the next words I would get in is basically, all right, Jerry, talk to you later. But, yeah, unbelievable man. I love him.
I love him too, B. And that's a great label you put on him, our basketball dad, because Jerry treated all of us like we were his sons. But next game, LeBron James.
One of the greatest players of all time. I think he will definitely go down in history as that. I love the way that he's kind of patterned his game after Magic, being a 6'9 point guard, but he's not the true point guard. We all know that. He's more of a scorer, but he also is a facilitator. And to me, a winner. And I think he'll go down as one of the greatest of all time. Not the greatest, in my opinion. I know there's a lot of talk between him and MJ on who's the greatest of all time. That you know, that title still goes to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in my mind. But he is definitely going to be in that top five, top 10 when you start talking about greatest players.
You're starting to think alike, B. Scott. Dr. Buss.
Best owner ever. Innovator, a visionary. You know, Dr. Buss was the one that talked about bringing in, you know, TV, you know, prime time at the time, and bringing cheerleaders, you know, to do their thing at halftime and do their thing between timeouts to keep the crowds engaged. And you and I both know, you know, anytime you were around Dr. Buss, you know, he treated you just like you were one of his. You know, he was one of the best owners I've ever seen, ever been around. He even called me, Coop, when I got fired from New Orleans. He called me and asked me, when are you going to be back in town? I want you to come to a game. And when I came back, went to a game, sit in the box with him, and we just talked, you know, just talked basketball. He was just a truly unbelievable person and one of the most humble people I've ever met at that position. I mean, again, another person that I just love and miss dearly, because Dr. Buss was something. A lot of stuff that goes on today, you know, even with the Lakers organization, you know, and even though Jeannie's doing a great job, and probably before Jeannie took over, a lot of stuff that's going on over the last 5, 6 years or 10 years with the Lakers wouldn't have been happening with Jerry Buss here. Yeah. There's no way. You know, a lot of it wouldn't happen. So I still think by far, to me, the greatest owner of all sports, of any sport.
Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Irving is one of the most gifted point guards I've ever seen. This kid has no weaknesses offensively. He can go left as well as right. He can pull up off the dribble. He can catch and shoot. 3-point range. I saw the kid at 19, you know, when we had him in Cleveland. We would post him up. He was that good in the post. He just has no weakness. He could be, you know, really, when this is all said and done, if he can continue to stay healthy, he can be in that conversation as one of the greatest, you know, small point guards, you know, the Isaiahs, the Chris Pauls and guys like that, the John Stocktons. He can be put in that category if he can stay healthy and just play the game of basketball and kind of just leave all that other outside stuff alone. But the kid is extremely talented. And like I said, I had him at 19, Coop, and I saw it right then. I said, this kid has no weaknesses on the offensive end.
You know, he would have been he'd have been a nightmare to guard. I'm glad we don't see people like that. But he's funny. Last but not least, Kobe Bryant.
One of the greatest workers I've ever seen. And I know it's crazy, Coop, because how hard me and you and Magic and all those guys, how much we practice and, you know, how we would get to practice early to work on our shots, how after practice we have shooting games, you know, us three. And then Magic, you know, developed a little baby hook that he had us doing in practice every day. We was doing all these games. But KB was a different beast. And I tell people this all the time. Vince Carter, Tracy McGrady, more talented than Kobe Bryant, athletic-wise, but they didn't have the heart and the desire and the work ethic that KB had. I mean, 37, you know, 11 o'clock practice, he's there at 9:30 because he wants to make 500 shots from five different spots and then practice. I just never seen anybody like him from that standpoint. And that's why, to me, he made himself one of the greatest, you know, players of all time, is his work ethic. And his Mamba mentality was second to none.
Hey, that's from Byron Scott, my top five, okay, the lightning round. B, a little bit about our playing days and let you go. I know you're busy because you got to get back out there on the golf course. What do you shoot, a three, a four?
First of all, Coop, I can stay here all day with you. You know, I mean, shit, I'll do golf later. Yeah, I can do that tomorrow.
No, thank you.
My handicap, come on, man. You know you come way before that.
That's why I'm in love with my
karma. Handicaps are five.
Why I'm in love with my karma flavored teammate, Byron Scott. B, your thoughts on some of the Celtics, that rivalry with the Celtics. Who did you hate most on that team and wanted to hit? Now, I'm going to tell you mine first. I wanted to slap the shit out of Cedric Maxwell so many times, man. And now I've grown to love the guy.
Who was your guy? Coop? I mean, of course, Danny Ainge. Hated Danny Ainge with a passion. You know, I just wanted to, you know, I remember we had one play. Buck was like, B, we're going to run 52. So you're going to catch the ball, and Danny Ainge is going to be trailing you. So he's going to be on your left side. He said, I want you to go up, put that left elbow out. You're going to hit him right in his damn throat. And I said, Buck, that's going to be an offensive foul. He said, baby B, trust, do that. Man, I did that shit, Coop. Bam, shot it, heard the whistle, the ball. Count it. Foul on Danny Ainge, right? And Danny Ainge over there like this. You know, did you see what he did? You see what he did to me? And Buck, that's what I'm talking about, B, you know. And I was like, I wanted to hit that dude every game we played. I was trying to find a way just to get one on his ass. I just hated him so much. But like you said, you know, when he went into being a general manager and I'm coaching, I had a few encounters with him where I had to talk to him and everything. And after that, we were cool. You know, everything was kind of squashed. And I found out I didn't like Cedric as well, because he came in to do an interview with me when I was coaching in New Jersey. And it was my first year coaching. And our guy said, well, he does it with every head coach. You know, so can Cedric come in and do an interview with you? And I looked at him just like this, Coop, and straight at his name is Mark. I said, Mark, hell no, I'm not doing an interview with Cedric. You know, coach, he does it with every team head coach. I said, I don't give a shit. I ain't talking to his ass. And I didn't talk to him. The first year, you know, we went Boston twice. I never did an interview with him. And then my man Marks was like, coach, you're killing me. The next year he's like, please. I said, all right, I'll talk to him. So he comes in, you know, Cedric, hey, what's going on? And I'm sitting there like, what's up? You know, and we finally sit down and we start talking. I was straight Inglewood too, Coop. I was like, yeah, what's up? You know, and he sat down, we start talking, and he ended up being there like 10 minutes later because I was like, okay, you know what? We had a good time. And I was like, all right, this dude's all right, you know. So it took me a while to open up to, like, you know, Danny and Maxwell and Larry. We were on, you know, the panel together for the first, you know, for that lottery pick. And so, you know, got to know Larry a little bit more. But, yeah, it was hard for a while. But, man, ML Carr and Danny Ainge, I wanted to knock the shit out of them.
Ari.
I mean, you know, I think, it's interesting because it's like, you guys really had bad blood for each other, and it lasted. Like, you hear that when you talk, when we, you know, we hear Coop talk to any of these guys. And I don't know, does that exist today? In today's game, is that gone?
No, that's gone. These guys are all buddy buddies. And, you know, I knew that when I was coaching New Orleans and we were playing against Utah and Darren Williams and Chris Paul, you know, were you know, they were right behind each other in the draft. You know, we ended up getting, you know, Chris Paul at four. Utah took Darren Williams at three. And, you know, the night before the game, we come in, or the day of the game, we come in for shoot around. And Chris Paul was like, you know, what'd you do last night, coach? I said, I do what I normally do before the night, you know, night before a game. I go to a movie, you know, and relax, and I go back home and I, you know, start thinking about the game. I said, what you do? He said, oh, me and Darren came over, you know, last night. We had dinner and everything and, you know, spent the night. I took him back to the hotel this morning. I said, you did what? I said, wait a minute. Y'all did. He spent the night? I said, what kind of shit is this? And now y'all going to go and battle each other? I said, man, I don't get it. I said, I just don't get it. I said, there's no way in hell that if Boston was in town, me and Danny Ainge going to have dinner together and he's going to spend the night at my house. I said, there's no way in hell. So I don't get that. Those rivalries are been gone. You know, that's why all these guys are joining each other because they want to play with their buddies and all this shit. I mean, that stuff is – it don't exist, the rivalries like they did back in the day. That Boston Celtic-LA rivalry – will be the best and last rivalry that we'll ever see.
But you know, it really made basketball, took it to another level, enabling these players to do what they do today.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, what we were able to accomplish in the 80s and 90s and the teams before us have made the game what it is today. You know, the popularity of the game, the money these guys are getting paid, you know, has all been paved away by, you know, us, just like it was paved away, you know, from Cousy and you know, and Will Chamberlain and Bill Russell and all those guys and Jerry West for us. So, you know, I don't, you know, to me, you know, I tell them kudos to all of them, you know, get as much money as you can, you know, while you can, because it is a business. And as soon as you can't play the game, you're going to get traded or cut or whatever the case may be. But this game has been made on the backbones of all these guys before them. So my biggest thing with all the young guys is pay homage to the guys who got this to where it is. You know, they don't know the history of basketball enough, which is something that's surprising me. When we came in, you know, Coop, you before me, but I know when I got, I knew about the Celtics back in the day. You know, I knew the history of the game back in the day. These guys, I was in Cleveland coaching, and I mentioned Sidney Moncrief, and they was like, who was that? I was like, are you fucking kidding me? You don't know Sidney Moncrief or James Toney? You know, guys like that, they was like, no. I was like, man, y'all need to really look back at the history of the game of basketball.
You know, B, after we play our game, I went overseas, you went overseas and played a little bit. But again, one of the things, what influenced you to get into coaching?
For me, Coop, it was something that Pat Riley said and Larry Brown. When I was with the Lakers in my fifth or sixth year, me and Riles was talking one day. And Riles said, and I mean, he said it just like this. He said, when you coach one day, you'll understand what I'm going through. And I looked around, I said, you got your damn mind, right? I was still young. You know, I was like, I ain't coaching. You know, I ain't, you got your damn, you crazy. And then, you know, when I was in my 10th year, I go to Indiana and I'm playing for the great Larry Brown, who's a Hall of Fame coach as well, won everywhere he's been. And he would ask me on a day-to-day basis during practice, you know, he called me by, hey, bye. How would you guys double team, you know, this guy? I said, well, we would do it two ways. You know, we either come from the nail and we double team, you know, put our chest on his arm and we lean on him, try to get him to have some air under that ball. And this is our rotation. If it goes this way, we go opposite. It goes this way, you know. And he was like, well, let's try that. So we would try it in practice. And he was like, all right, that's how we're going to do it. You know, that's how we're going to. Then he came to me one day after about a week of, you know, kind of picking my brain on the way we played the game and how we would, you know, take away people. He said, I don't know if you ever thought about this, but I think you'd be a hell of a coach. And I went, damn, you're the second person who said that to me, you know, Pat Riley and Larry Brown. So I'm thinking to myself, they see something in me that I don't see, you know, and you're talking about two Hall of Famers. And so from that point on, Coop, I started keeping a journal of things I would do in certain situations, you know, how I would run a team, you know, what my defensive philosophy would be and things of that nature. And that kind of got me into coaching.
And you know what, B, you coached the Lakers, you coached Brooklyn Nets, and you coached the Cavaliers. I know each one of those organizations are different, but where did you most enjoy coaching?
Well, you left out one, New Orleans.
New Orleans, that's right. Okay, coached, New Orleans.
You know, we drafted Chris Paul, and we had David West, Tyson Chandler, Page and Strokovic. That was probably the most enjoyable, you know, 5 years that I spent there, because they allowed me to build that team up and get it to where I felt we had a chance to win a championship. And then, you know, Mr. Shin, who was the owner, and I had a guy who was my assistant coach who knew Mr. Shin real well, and he told me this, Coop, and I was like, come on, Gad, you got to be you tripping. He said, no, you're going to get this team exactly the way you want them, and he's going to fuck it up. That's exactly what he told me. I was like, really? I was like, the owner? He said, I'm telling you, B, Coop, I got the team exactly where I want it. We ended up winning 56 games, had the second best record in the Western Conference. We had a great young point guard in Chris Paul, West. Both of those guys ended up being all-stars. Tyson, we had a really good team, and we had great chemistry. And sure enough, the next year he wanted to trade. He traded Tyson, right? I was in the Bahamas, and I had told them when I first signed with them as head coach, I said, no decision can be made without me knowing about it. Is that cool? We all agreed. There's absolutely, you know, because you know basketball players, we won't make any trades unless we, you know, talk to you, which is some more bullshit, you know, of course. And they traded Tyson Chandler. When I'm in the Bahamas, I heard it at a basketball camp. I go to a camp, the kid says, so you guys traded Tyson Chandler today. I said, what? You know, I was like, hey, Jeff, I'm in the Bahamas here. And a kid at a camp just told me we traded Tyson. Oh, yeah, coach, I was going to give you a call and tell you about that. I said, get the fuck. Are you fucking kidding me?
I was going to call you.
Butler. I was going to. That's the exact words. AT, I'm telling you. I was about to call you. I'm like, man, get that. So he traded Tyson. Then we traded Rasul Butler, the late Rasul Butler, who's one of my favorite people of all time. That was 2/3 of my team. And then they expect me to win the next year. I said, hell out y'all fucking mind. You know, and then, of course, they fired me because I said to them, I said, I don't think we're going in the same direction. I'm trying to win championships. You trying to cut back on money and all this stuff. When you told me that money was an object, I want to win a championship here in New Orleans. But, you know, he's talking out the side of his neck, obviously. And that was it. But that team was the most fun I had because they were young. They were ready, you know, Coop. They listened. They were coachable. And I really enjoyed being around them. And I really just had a lot of fun with them.
Teacher asked about going on vacation, huh?
Yeah, no shit. I was like, okay, doing the basketball, I guess I got to go on vacation like soon as the season's over. Before the season. I can't go in July. I make a trade in July. You know, I'm like, damn. You know, I get back and, you know, 2/3 of my team is gone. You know, it was crazy.
So, B, talking about winning championships, we're going back and forth a little bit. What out of the championship teams we had, which one is your favorite championship team with the Lakers?
Oh man. That 87-88 team. That's my favorite team, Coach. Because you know we win in 87, you know, 86-87, we win, and then Rouse gets up and you know, does the unthinkable because we're trying to just celebrate and says he guaranteed we're gonna win it again. And we all looked at each other like, What did he just say? You know, and we can't even enjoy this one. You know, we all sitting up there at the Forum Club, you know, and he says that. So, but what it showed me is, you know, and you know, Rouse had calculated this. He had thought this wasn't something that just, you know, that he was just throwing out, you know, out the side of his neck, you know, off the fly. This was something that he had already thought about, and he knew us. He knew if he made that challenge to us, that basically we're going to forget about the summer and vacation, start getting ready to, you know, make this damn guarantee come true. And that year was probably the hardest year that I've ever had in basketball. Cause I know you remember we sweep through Denver and then we go 7-7-7 on every other team, you know, in that playoff run to win the championship. It was the most exhausting that I've ever been. But it was the most fulfilling because we did something that no team had done for almost 20 years. And that team, we just all seemed to be so damn locked in from the first day of training camp to that Game 7 against Detroit. We were so locked in. That was, to me, the most rewarding and the most fun I ever had as a basketball player.
You're the first guy not to say 85, by the way. You're the first guy that was on the 85 team to not say 85, which I love.
Yeah, I mean, 85 was great. We got that monkey off our back. But we also was able to do something in 88 that no team had done in 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, win back-to-back titles. So for me, 85 was special because it was my first, but that 87 and 88 back-to-back, man, I think that was, you know, that was something that not a whole lot of teams had thought about doing. And obviously, Riles was thinking about it. You know, once we won it in 87, I'm sure he started, you know, he was already, you know, them wheels was turning. You know, how can I fire these guys up to get them ready to try to do this again? Because after 85, you know, the 86 season, you know, we were still damn good, but we did have a little bit, in my opinion, we lost a little, you know, had a little loss of focus, you know, maybe had that fat cat syndrome. We had won the championship, you know, hey, man, we the shit, you know, but when he guaranteed the next one, it was like, man, we, you know, number one, mm-hmm. we don't want to make Rob a liar, so we got to come with it, and we did.
And you know what, B, and I'll say this about 89. We go 87, 88, 89. I had Rick Mahorn and Isaiah Thomas on here. And I told them, I said, you know what? Y'all are very, very lucky because, again, Riles was really pushing us. He didn't make the comment about we're going three-peat, but it was there and we knew right. it. So we come out, he pushed us so hard. And the first practice we have in Detroit, you snap your ham. And I was like, okay, we can kind of overcome that one. And then, you know, first game of the play, Magic snaps his. And I tell people this, had you two not gotten hurt, we were the bad boys, shit, they would have been bad kids. We would have been smacking their ass around. And we would have got that three-peat real quick. What's your thoughts?
Coop, I love the bad boys would have been the bad kids because we'd have been whooping their ass. I love that thought, boy. You know what? I tell you, as good as they were, they got lucky. We had a 13-game winning streak, which was unheard of. We was rolling through the playoffs. We were playing on and we were hitting on all cylinders. And I remember talking to one of the dudes in the media before the game, you know, before we even started game one. I said, we'll win in maybe five. It might go six. I just knew we had a much better basketball team. And if myself and Buck were healthy, it would have been a three-peat. And we already had three-peat shirts. Shit, we were getting ready for that. You know, we didn't make it publicly, you know, but behind closed doors, we would like three-peat. You know, we're going to do this again. But just like any other sport, you know, when you look at the finals, you know, it's all about, you know, if you can get there healthy, you know, that's a big advantage. And that was the first one that, you know, to this day, and I think Riles will finally admit that taking us to Santa Barbara and having that damn mini training camp was the worst thing done. Because I felt it, you know, during one of the practices that day, and I told Gary Beatty, and he gave me a day off and was just doing treatment. And then I came back and I was like, oh, it feels good. And then we do a damn rebounding drill the first time we get to Detroit and it snaps. And I think to this day, if we didn't have that practice, we would on pro.
Wow. Oh, for sure. For sure. You listen to Byron Scott on Showtime with Coop. Speaking of health, B, let's get to the Lakers this year. Lakers last year lost because of health. AD goes down. LeBron goes down. What do you think your chances are of winning a championship this year? And I'm going to put it out there. If the Lakers are healthy the whole season, or especially in the playoffs, they're going to win another one.
I agree 110% with you. I think if LeBron and AD are healthy, they got a chance to win it last year. I think with the additions of Russell, you know, Carmelo, you know, everybody's talking about aging and all this crap. But I'm telling you, if those guys stay healthy and they get through the playoffs, I don't care if they get the first seed. It don't matter if they're healthy. If they in, I think it, you know, they're going to win another championship. So. Anytime you can get those guys with that type of talent, they already did it with just, you know, AD and LeBron. Now you add in a Russell who was hungry as hell, happy to be back home. You add in a Carmelo who, if you come off the bench and you play him, what, 10, 15, 17 minutes a game, he still light that ball up. You know, with those additions, I don't see Brooklyn or any of these teams that can beat them in a 7-game series with everything being relatively equal. Them being healthy, Brooklyn being healthy, Milwaukee, whoever the case may be, I still think the Lakers are going to win the championship this year.
Pete, what are your thoughts on the NBA in general, overall? You like it? Three-point shooting? You think they should add the four-point shot?
You know, I think analytics has played a part in the NBA now, a big part. I think you're going to have to add like a 4-point shot or something like that, Coop, to get that excitement back into the game. Not saying that the game is not exciting now, you know, because I number one, I don't think a lot of these guys care about the game like we did. They don't have that passion. A lot of them are just playing tail of the playoffs where we played it, you know, all out every single game, because you got to look at it like it's your last game. That's one of the reasons that I do love Russell Westbrook. I love the way he plays, the passion that he plays with, because he comes with it every single night, and I love that about him. I wish more of the guys in the NBA did that. I got certain players that I do like and enjoy watching and would pay to watch, and then there's a bunch of them that I wouldn't watch them shit if they paid me, you know. So
they have to pay you to come.
so they have to pay me, and I still have a hard time watching Coop. I still have a hard time, but you know, just like you and I, we bleed purple and gold. We're gonna always bleed purple and gold. I'm gonna always be an NBA fan. But I don't watch as much as people might think I do as far as, you know, regular season and things of that nature. When it gets to the playoffs, then, you know, I'm watching a lot of, you know, the Lakers when they're in playoffs. I watched a lot of the Phoenix Suns, obviously, this year because of Chris Paul and Devin Booker. I really love those two guys. And the Greek Freak in Milwaukee, I was just amazed at how good this guy is without being able to really shoot the ball. I mean, he is so long.
Exactly.
Coop, am I lying? I mean, if you make him a fourth, shoot 17 foot on out, he can have, it's a hit and miss. And if he ever get to the point where he develops that and can make that on a consistent basis along with free throws, cancel Christmas. You can't stop him. You can't guard him. You know, so I'm still a fan, but, you know, it's more really towards the playoffs is when I really start to watch and pick it up, because I still think a lot of these guys and a lot of these teams, you know, you could turn the TV on in the fourth quarter with like 6 minutes left, and you can really see what's happening in the game. And you know, you don't really need to watch the first three quarters.
There you have it, from Byron Scott's lips to Showtime with Coop's ears, all the way. Baby B, thank you so much, sir. And B, you want to pump your podcast? It's Off the Dribble.
Yeah, podcast Off the Dribble with Byron Scott is launching September 29th. I got some great guests on there. One being my dark chocolate friend, Michael Cooper, my brother from another mother. I got my man, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I got James Worthy, AC Green, Kirk Rampis. And then that's just my Showtime boys. And then, you know, I got Cedric the Entertainer. I got Joe Torre. Jeffrey Osborne. I kind of went a little bit of everything. I didn't want it to just be, you know, sports. I want to be a little bit of everything. So yeah, check it out. Off the Dribble. You can pretty much find it at anywhere that you can see podcasts. We're going to be on there. And September 29th is when we launch it.
D, thank you so much. And just a little note here, your Wi-Fi sucked, man. You got to get that done a little bit. But your show is in the studio, so you don't have those issues. Big thank you, man. I love you, brother. Always will. Anything I can do for you, let us know. Everybody, that's Byron Scott with the most beautiful jump shot you ever saw. D Scott. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Coop. Love you, brother.
See you, B.